Money and markets, our theme tonight. It's so fascinating. The Buddha says, those who are awake live in a state of constant amazement. And this week was a reminder that when the powers that be want to round up trillions of dollars of capital and send it in a direction, they know how to do it, and they know how to do it quickly. So let's connect the dots between what's happening. Several weeks ago, we had leaks about $32 trillion of capital in offshore havens, all designed to embarrass the institutions and people who have that capital. Remember, it served the financial coup d'etat well to have that money moved offshore, but now it's being rounded up and is going to head back in a variety of ways into the securities markets of choice. It's also going to increase taxable income. So let's take a look at what this is. We talked in the second quarter equity overview about the importance of keeping the bond market floating and the difficulty of doing that. And one of the advantages, of course, is to begin to pump up the U.S. equity markets. And certainly that's what we've been seeing for the last 9 months, with markets really at having come up in an extraordinary way. That's not without tension. What you're seeing globally, and we described this in the second quarter overview, is you're seeing the U.S. and other central banks printing money, having that money float their stock markets up. That puts the companies under their jurisdiction in a good position with high PEs and strong cash positions to buy up assets and companies around the globe, particularly in jurisdictions which are not taking that kind of loose monetary position. So it's really the buyout of the responsible by the irresponsible. And that causes great tension in the currency market. So we're seeing central banks around the country now starting to print and doing the same thing. I had a report I talked about last week. One Swiss money manager said that the Swiss central bank had bought $85 billion in equities over the prior 30 days. So again, let's connect the dots to this week's stories. As we're watching the most significant capital shift since the bailouts and QE 1, 2, and 3 have unfolded. And that's going to be a very big movement of capital. So following the leaks about the offshore accounts, we see an emergency meeting in London this last weekend. Oddly enough, it was G7, not G8. That means Russia got left out. After the meeting was over, the G7 announced an agreement to target tax havens. And please remember, Russia, of course, was the place that got most targeted on the Cyprus offshore tax haven squabble. So we see on Monday the Russians announcing they're throwing out a U.S. diplomat claiming he's a CIA spy. My guess is it's not unrelated to their being banned from the London soiree. Putin, no doubt, was irritated. We see the G7 group again saying they're going to target tax havens. And what happens Monday morning? What a surprise. An IRS scandal promptly begins on Monday morning, with the political appointee, civil service, and I suspect even the contractors being targeted. The job is to clean sweep the IRS and put in a new team. By Tuesday, the Attorney General Eric Holder announced FBI and DOJ probes into the IRS. That's probably not enough to save Holder's skin. We see wider scandals relating to Benghazi and spying on reporters, that may also be pointing to turnout Holder. They really need somebody if they're going to do this, because this is going to be very big and involve many, many different, scores of different jurisdictions. They need someone who's even meaner and probably with an international background. It wouldn't hurt to have someone with an international tax background. That's certainly not Holder. So if anything, the lead of this should probably go to DOJ. So now by Wednesday, we saw the top folks at the IRS were out. By Thursday, an acting head from OMB is over at IRS. He's unlikely to be the new IRS commissioner. They're going to probably need somebody with more stature to do it, unless they have the whole lead team over at DOJ and use other teams at Treasury. Remember, IRS is part of Treasury. But what you're watching is proof positive that when government wants to move very quickly, they can. This is going to put them in a position to turn over lots of different parts of the infrastructure and get it organized in a way that they want. Now, targeting the tax havens, the goal will be to extend U.S. access, not just to data, but to jurisdictions, so that they are really able to encourage capital to go in the direction that they want and increase taxes as a result of commanding more of those flows. If you want to understand what's probably going to happen, it helps to look at what has happened in Switzerland and what the Department of Justice has been up to, what Julian Assange calls lawfare, extending the jurisdiction to get a picture of what this may look like. After the Swiss example, tax haven institutions, my guess, are going to fall into line. They're going to be much too afraid to fight. Over the last decade, you've seen tax amnesty processes offered to both companies and individuals for those who stayed offshore and violated U.S. taxes, didn't come clean. This could be a very painful process. The goal, again, is to direct the capital, particularly back into the U.S. markets, and I suspect the number one target is the U.S. equity markets. You're also going to see tax increases or particularly corporations targeted for more taxes. But I think the goal here is capital controls much more than taxes. We predicted at the beginning of the year on the Saleri report that the tax reform that Max Baucus and the tax committees were working on at Ways and Means would not happen. There's been a tremendous effort by Baucus, who's retiring, and others to try and get that package done and get support for tax reform. What this means, this week's developments mean that package is dead, so tax reform is dead. With Baucus retiring, it's probably dead for a while. Now, the targeting the tax havens is not the only aspect of what this capital roundup is about, which shows you that what we're watching is very, very big. Time Magazine came out, it's up on the blog, with an article that mandatory retirement accounts for all employees is going to be proposed, if not passed, by the feds. They're targeting the amounts to provide up to 20% of retirement needs. How this is going to work, given the squeeze that of Obamacare is putting on both companies and citizens, I just can't imagine how the economics of this are going to work. It could be very ugly. Of course, everybody's question is this going to impact IRAs or 401ks existing? No, this is going to try and add to it. Think of this as increasing Social Security requirements, except the incremental money has to go into the securities market. In theory, depending on how fast this is done and how it's structured, it could add trillions more into the securities market. But it should probably work a little bit like mandatory 401ks. And we've covered those before on the Saleri report. If you look at into the special Saleri report lists, we did one on different proposals. You can find them on the blog as well. And I'll make sure those links are up on tonight's blog post. In addition, we see the House pass a bill, and this will be up on the blog tomorrow, requiring the SEC to publish the crowdfunding regulations out by October 31st. That also could add trillions to of fresh capital into equity. It will be private equity, but that's going to bump up and encourage more into public equity as well. So whether it's the tax haven targeting or mandatory requirement accounts or crowdfunding, what we're looking at is an extraordinary reengineering of capital that could both strengthen the U.S. dollar and the U.S. markets, both bond and equities. At the same time, this was quite a week, there was a big push to trumpet U.S. energy self-sufficiency. One article laying out all the arguments that the U.S. is moving to not just energy self-sufficiency, but to become an energy exporter, and that's going to re-engineer the global supply lines globally with a very dramatic impact across the board on the energy industry. Now, what's interesting is if you listen to our interviews with Jim Norman on the oil card, the last one, April 2012, it's almost blow by blow a description of what we were discussing on the oil card. So we've covered this development on the Saleri report and its potential impact on both the dollar and the economy. And if you haven't listened to that April 2012 interview with Jim Norman, it's well worth listening to. At the same time, we're trumpeting U.S. energy self-sufficiency. a variety of pieces coming out saying the budget deficit is dropping, taxes, receipts are good, and the deficits are much lower than expected. Now, this is spin. This is not reality. The federal finances are in a very bad way. But on top of everything else that sort of got spun out this week, it helps to keep defense spending high for now while more dollars can be raised targeting offshore havens. Interestingly enough, and again, this is more defense of the dollar, I did a podcast on gold money that was published late last week and ran this week, and talked a lot with them about the goal of the podcast was really to talk about bitcoins. And I talked about the extent to which the central banks can control anything they want to when they want to. Interestingly enough, after the podcast came out, there was a great deal of hurt feelings from the Bitcoin group. What did we see? We saw, again, up on the blog, the Department of Homeland Security has exercised a seizure subpoena on the largest Bitcoin exchange. Perfect example of when the central bankers want to assert control. They can, but if you look at what they're doing on Bitcoin, they're moving in, and private venture capitalists are investing in some exchanges, and then the Department of Homeland Security is attacking the exchanges that don't get investor participation, and whether the control comes in the form of venture capital or the control comes in the form of seizure subpoenas. What you're watching is the movement, nice of rough, asserting control over that marketplace. So across the board, what you're seeing is unprecedented political support moving in to defend and support the U.S. dollar and equity markets. The clear message is that Mr. Global needs the equity markets and the dollar to outperform gold and commodities for now. We certainly saw that with gold dropping as a result of particularly the announcement on the tax havens at the beginning of the week. The markets understand the extent to which this could swing capital from one direction to another, including out of gold. Remember, when the attack on Cyprus happened, a lot of gold was sold on the orders of the regulators. So, approaching summer, it looks like gold and silver are going to stay in the doghouse until they find a bottom. We had a great interview last week with Stuart Thompson of Graceland Updates and Franklin Sanders. We covered why we all think gold has yet to find a bottom, and we think it's likely it will this summer, but just not yet. And if you're interested, do listen to that Solaria report. It's a very good one.